You're listening to
Sci-Fi Nick.
Greetings, one and all. Welcome to Sci-Fi Dig Show 320. This week, I, as always, have more friends for you. This episode is going to be called The Cure. Also, we have upcoming DVD release dates and a little bit of news. Now, you know, the big news, obviously, is that Abrams is going to do the next Star Wars film, and it's supposed to be more of a standalone type thing. The thing that was funny that I found is I started looking around to see just if there was any more information at the time I'm recording this podcast. I couldn't find much. I ended up back on Blaster's site. Now, Blaster's an okay site, and I could sit here and read all these stories. It's kind of like, it's kind of like the National Enquirer for fans of entertainment, right? But there is, like, every article was about something that's already happened. It's like they're reaching for news. You know, we have a Star Wars Episode One actor talking about the past. We have one of the cast of Lost saying how they never watched a series finale talking about the past. We have them talking about Firefly, which happened in the past. We have, we have the original Watchmen or gets a chance to fix a flaw that happened in the past. It's like everything is really happening in the past here. I realize that this is kind of we got a lot of stuff going on that's happening, you know, news wise, but nothing has actually been, you know, we have, you know, the new Star Trek film, we have a new Star Wars film, all these things are being talked about, but nothing is actually, you know, there's no product right yet that we can really delve into. But it's kind of interesting when I'm looking through all this and seeing what's what. A lot of new series and especially a lot of new TV series. I mean, television has really taken off when you think about it, that, you know, we're in a time when television is moving away from, you know, the small screen to the smaller screens. You know, you're going to be able to watch it, you know, eventually wherever you want, whenever you want. You're not going to be on any kind of timetable. And with all that going on, it's kind of funny how many good actors are coming to television. You know, these movie actors, and everybody always said, don't go to TV because then you're going to kind of kill your career or whatever if you're a movie actor. And that is actually not even remotely what's happening now. It's just like, it seems as though a lot of these actors that are well known for movies go to the smaller screen and can still do outstanding work and not have to worry about damaging their career. If anything, it is helping their career because they're being exposed to more people and they're getting more material to go through and have more of an opportunity to really shine. And there's been a lot of that going on. Anyway, I just thought that I would comment on. I'm real excited for. I mean, I cannot wait for the next Star Trek film. I just cannot wait. I am really stoked for that. Comixology just had a sale on the ongoing Star Trek comic books, a 99-cent sale, and so I went and bought all that they had. So I think for like 12. Well, they had the first three trades available, and I think it cost me like $12 or something. And you cannot beat that for three trades worth of comics. So I just started reading those. I haven't read much more beyond the first one, but I'm really enjoying what I'm reading so far. Anyway, I have a long Fringe episode, so I'm going to speed this along. February 5th in the U.S., you're going to get a couple of, not a whole lot of science fiction, but there are going to be a couple of good ones and a couple of other movies that are probably well known. We're going to get Cloud Atlas. I've been wanting to see this, and this is definitely something that wasn't in the theater long enough for me to go and check it out, but I want to check it out. This is going to be a rental as soon as I can rent it, whenever that is. I don't know. It depends on whether or not it's on that little quarantine list where you got to wait so many days before you can rent it. We're getting a re-release of Disney's Peter Pan. We're getting the comedy Here Comes the Boom. We're getting Deadfall. That is about it. Animaniacs Volume 4. And wow, it's a really thin week for science fiction. We're going to get Ultimate Spider-Man, Avenging Spider-Man, and that seems to be about it. So, not a huge, not a huge week for science fiction, although there's, I'm sure there's plenty of stuff out there. Now, I did get The Dark Knight Returns Part 2. Again, you know, the DC stuff is the only stuff that I order, that I buy as soon as it comes out. You know, I mean, that's the stuff that I know it's coming out, and as soon as there's an option to pre-order it, I do it, because they, as far as I'm concerned, they can do no wrong. They have just done some fantastic stuff, and I'm really, really enjoying it. And this was kind of a different film, The Dark Knight Returns, because there's not a whole lot of adaptations. I mean, when they do it, they usually modify it quite a bit, or, you know, a little bit. And that makes some people complain. Me, I have the comic, so I don't really need to have it be exactly like that on the DVD. But The Dark Knight, they did a really good job of putting it all together and making it, you know, very much like the book. And even like the super bloody parts, they kind of, the camera kind of swung away a little bit, so you don't get to see too much graphic violence, but you get an idea of what's going on. And they just did a fantastic job with the cast and the animation and everything. It just looked really good. But the next feature is going to be Superman Unbound. And I'm not quite sure when it's coming out. I would assume it would come out this spring. I'm pretty excited about it. And what makes me even more excited is that it has Brainiac in it. And Brainiac is going to be voiced by John Noble. Yes, I was very excited. As soon as they played a couple little snippets, I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's John Noble. And before I can even get to the computer to look it up on IMDb, they went to the studio where everybody was doing the voices, and sure enough, there he was doing it. And man, he just does a fantastic Brainiac. And so, of course, I was texting some of my friends, letting them know that he was going to be on the next one. It was a big deal for me, and I just a fantastic actor all around, you know. And so I wanted to share that with everybody listening to Sci-Fi Dig, that even if you don't get into the animated stuff too much, and you should, if you're not giving this stuff a chance, you're doing yourself a disservice. Really great stories. Some are better than others. Wonder Woman, I think, is still the best. But I'm just really digging what they're putting out. And it's funny because I can't remember how long ago they started doing this, but now I have quite a collection. Cause I've purchased every single one except for the Black Adam one, which I borrowed off of somebody to watch, because that was just the little snippets. They put these little tiny, like 7 or 8 minute side features. They don't do it anymore. On with the films, and then what happened was that they put all those together on one DVD, and then put a Black Adam one on there. And I really wanted to see that one, but I didn't want to buy the DVD at the time. If it comes out dirt cheap, I'll pick it up. But at the time, I wasn't going to pay $15 for, you know, like a 15 minute film or whatever, or 20 minute film. And so somebody had it, and they lent it to me, and I watched it, and I really liked it. And but I wish they would go back to putting those on there. I was really enjoying what they were doing with the more obscure characters. I mean, they had a Jonah Hex one that I really dug, and a Green Arrow one, which was really good. And I'm not quite sure why they're not doing that anymore. I'm sure somewhere somebody is like, well, you know, we don't want that to interfere with our other properties and blah, blah, blah. But I really dug when they did that, and I wish that they would do that more. And this was the first, also, if you get, well, there's always like two versions of the films. You know, I usually get the one that has the DVD and the Blu-ray, because it's like $2 more. And it always usually also has whatever topic they happen to cover. They usually have some of the DC animated stuff, several episodes from Justice League or Batman the Animated. This is the first one that had a Brave and the Bold episode on it. And you get that as well. So for the, I think it ended up costing me $15 for the DVD, the Blu-ray, the digital version. And I got that, which was the movie was a little over an hour, and I got those three animated shorts, and you get all the special features. And I think that's a pretty good deal for that price. So anyway, these are available in like the Redbox, and some of this stuff's available on Netflix streaming. And I highly recommend all the sci-fi fans out there, if you haven't taken the time to check these out, please do so. And if you get one and you don't like it, try another one, because sometimes they have different appeals, you know. Anyway, if you live in the UK, you're going to get Taken 2. You're going to get Hotel Transylvania. You're going to get Girls, the complete HBO season 1. Wow, that seems about. Of course, you're going to get the Taken double pack. It's going to have both movies in it as well. The Bourne Trilogy Steelbook. It's just 17 pounds, and it has all the Bourne movies in it. You're going to get the Incredible Hulk Steelbook. That's interesting. Okay. And that seems to be about it. That's as far as sci-fi goes. I don't understand why there's no Doctor Who. That's going to upset me. You know, I got to have my Doctor Who every week, but you're going to get, this must be the time for steelbooks, because you're going to get the Kick-Ass Steelbook, the American Werewolf in London. These are all Universal 100th Anniversary editions. That must be why they're in steelbooks, although we don't really have those here so much. That seems to be about it. Oh, nope. Hellboy 2 Steelbook. You mean for the Steelbook, they can't give you both movies? They're just going to give you Hellboy 2. They're just going to give you one. That's kind of weird. Well, if you want to buy a Steelbook, now is the time to do that. That is kind of a neat packaging if you're into packaging. But I see that Fringe Season 5 is being I'm on Amazon UK, and they're already it's already available or going to be available for £28. It's the only season I don't have yet. It'll be released on May 13th. So I would definitely be picking up the Blu-ray of that. I highly recommend that if you're watching Fringe, I know a lot of people do stuff streaming. A lot of people don't have Blu-ray players yet, but if you have a Blu-ray player, it's worth a couple extra bucks to buy the Blu-rays. Season one looks fantastic, but the menus are a mess. Season two, however, they have everything is the way it should be, and the menus work, and it just, I can't believe what a good job they did in the HD area. I just didn't think it would look that good, but it really does. Anyway, I got a long Fringe episode, so I'll be back after that. This week's episode is entitled The Cure. It originally aired on October 21st, 2008. And this is episode 6 of season 1. Now, the overall story here is that a young lady goes into a diner and a police officer comes in. Because obviously she's kind of in distress, doesn't have any money, and a guy at the diner's trying to help her out. Gives her something to eat. And he calls the police officer to come in and maybe give her some sort of help. And he comes in, and the young woman seems kind of confused. And, you know, the police officer is like, you know, we can find somebody to help you. And she starts to freak out. He ends up arresting her because he just wants to get her help. He's not trying to, she hasn't really done anything wrong, but she starts to freak out and talk about people doing things to her and this and that. And as she gets upset, people in the diner just start to die of radiation exposure. And it's kind of a bloody mess. So, of course, the Fringe team is called in. And here is the first audio clip.
What?
Oh, that doesn't bother you?
Are you kidding? That man falls asleep counting pi to the 101st digit. That's soothing.
Walter!
Was I humming? I thought it was in my head.
It wasn't.
Forgive me, Olivia. Nothing sings like a kilovolt. Unique pitch. Nothing else in nature quite like it.
I'm sure you're right.
What's up? What's on your mind?
Short fuse today, I guess.
Indeed. The tension in your voice indicates that you're carrying a heavy psychic burden, tortured by the...
Hey, Walter, I think she liked it better when you were humming.
The incident occurred approximately 6 hours ago. All we've been able to determine so far is that they were exposed to high levels of radiation. Emily Kramer. Last night was the first time anyone's seen her in 2 weeks since she was reported missing by her parents. Police officer inside responded to a psych disturbance, which would explain why we found her in handcuffs.
You think she was a runaway?
Parents say no. They say she was perfectly happy. In fact, she'd just been accepted to a master's program she was excited about. Curiously, the level of radiation coming from Emily's body is almost 3 times as great as the rest.
Are you saying that she was the source?
Don't know. Dr. Bishop, any thoughts?
Yes. Where can I get one of those white suits?
Now, the next clip I have is of them examining the bodies at the diner, you know, and obviously there are, you know, there's radiation suits involved and things like that. And so him and Peter are kind of going over the bodies and seeing what's what. And Walter's kind of giving his diagnosis or, you know, not so much diagnosis, but just, you know, kind of figuring, trying to figure out what the heck happened.
Yeah. There's no head.
She was sick. Most likely Bellini's lymphysemia. Striped bruising on her neck and upper arms. Rash on her torso.
Do you know what he's talking about?
Bellini's lymphysemia. It's an autoimmune disease. Irreversible. The body destroys its own muscles and organs.
Meaning it's fatal?
Yeah.
But I've never seen Bellini's cause a victim to lose her head. And what's more curious, this woman seems to have been in remission. Cured even. The rash appears to be healing. The bruise is receding.
I'm going to hate myself for asking this, but how do you cure a disease that's incurable?
I haven't the slightest idea. Though I myself once cured this one in a dream. Opium. Fantastic stuff. Of course, I forgot how I did it as soon as I woke up.
Oh, thanks for the warning.
121 degrees. That's counterindicative for a hemorrhagic tumor. Most likely, water molecules excited all at once.
He means the guy's brain was boiled.
Like a Maine lobster. I need this body and the headless one taken back to my lab.
Walter, her disease, if there's no cure...
Well, that's a question. And one which we should pose to whoever was treating her. Which makes three questions. The other one being, what exactly happened here?
That's only two questions.
Oh, is it? Oh, the third question. Could I get some of this onion soup? It looks delicious.
Now, the other part of this story, and audio clips are going to kind of tell the tale here, but I'm going to give a quick overview here. It's Olivia's birthday, and Olivia has a past with her mother and father, but especially her father. And every year on her birthday, she gets a card. And that story is going to kind of unfold, but you need to know that she kind of lives in dread of getting that card. You know, every year on her birthday, she's kind of paranoid. And throughout the episode, we'll see instances where, you know, there's one scene where she comes into the office and she goes through the mail and you can just tell she's real nervous, but the card isn't there. Little things like that that I'm not going to touch back on too much until I get to the very end of the episode, and then I'll bring it back up. But with that being said, I need to set up this next audio clip, which is over 4 minutes long, but it's a couple of things put together here. The beginning of the clip is Walter and Peter in the lab. They're autopsying the bodies. And, you know, Peter's kind of grossed out by the whole thing, and he can't figure out why he's got to be there. And then we have that kind of runs into a clip of Charlie and Agent Dunham having a conversation, and that kind of sheds some light on it. We're going to get some more information on the background, her birthday, and what she dreads and all these sort of things. And it all kind of ties into the episode. And I will discuss a little bit more than that as I play more sound clips.
Do I really need to be here? Couldn't you just use a clamp?
Of course I could. But I enjoy the company. Quality time, as they say.
Because this is just like throwing around the old pigskin.
What's that smell?
Hyacinth, my third favorite flower. Associated in mythology with rebirth, which in this case is cruelly ironic.
It's coming from her?
Indeed, which indicates either a mutation at the genetic level or she was eating flowers. Perhaps her perfume.
How's it coming?
Oh, Olivia, join us. We've learned some things already.
We don't think she ran away.
Ligature marks.
So she was being held against her will.
Either that or she had a proclivity for sexual bondage. Scientific observation, not a judgment. Some of my fondest memories...
Oh, Walter, stop. Wherever that's going, it's just wrong.
There's also this. Subcutaneous injection marks. She's being given medicine intravenously.
So whoever was holding her captive was giving her drugs?
Yes, but not the enjoyable kind. In fact, quite unlike anything I've ever seen before.
You okay?
Should I be? So how'd she end up in the diner? Did she escape?
Perhaps not. There are two distinct methods of scientific experimentation. Lab trials or field trials.
You're suggesting they may have let her go on purpose?
Whoever did this wanted to make sure what they did to her was working.
So there was something inside her that killed those people at the diner in her...
Noggin? I'm not sure yet. It's a theory. Obviously, I'll be more certain once we identify the substance. Or when whoever did this tries to repeat their results.
You mean if they take another woman?
Judging by Agent Dunham's body language, I'd say she's receiving that very nose.
Okay.
Missing persons called in another case 4 hours ago. Her name is Claire Williams. She was diagnosed with Bellini's lymphedema 3 years ago.
Someone's targeting people with the disease?
That, or it's one hell of a coincidence. Hey, Liv. I get it.
You get what?
Young woman. What was done to her? You know, this coming your way today of all days.
It's okay. I'm okay.
Listen. I know you don't like to celebrate. But happy birthday.
Ken Williams? Olivia Dunham, Charlie Francis, FBI.
Claire, did you find her?
I'm afraid we don't have new information, but we do need to ask you a few questions. Her name is Emily Kramer. She suffered from the same disease as your wife. You seen her before?
Another case. What happened to her?
Do you know her, Mr. Williams?
No, I don't think so. We don't know anyone else with Bellini's. I mean, what we went through fighting Claire's disease and the constant pain. When the lesions started appearing, she stopped going out. The damn disease almost took everything from us, even our marriage. And then it was like a miracle.
A miracle?
She started getting better. And the pain went away.
She went into remission?
About 6 weeks ago. She was herself again. And now, please find my wife. Please find her for me.
As the case progresses, Olivia becomes more and more driven, and she finds a connection between a family whose daughter just died and this and the fact that there have been multiple kidnappings. And overall, you know, in this episode, you know, the background story, which I'm kind of giving you of the episode, really doesn't play into the overall series. And the idea here that is driving Olivia is the fact that, you know, as time goes on, she finds somebody who she believes is responsible for all this. And he is one of these individuals that's sort of above the law because of the amount of money that his company makes and, you know, things like that. And she's kind of correlating that to her father. And we're not quite sure what's going on because the reveal of what exactly happened I'm going to play it for you here in a few minutes, but I'm not going to give it to you yet, but you know, And when you get that reveal, it kind of all coalesces into why she is so driven. So they are having a wake, and Olivia just goes in, and she comes in the front door, and everybody's in the other room, and she goes upstairs to the bedroom and starts going through the deceased's room, and her mother comes in.
No. Don't you need a warrant for this? Hey, Olivia, stop. Okay, crashing a wake is bad enough. But rifling through a dead girl's things?
The only hope we have of finding a solid lead, so please help me.
What is it that we're looking for?
Anything. Any connection she may have had.
What are you doing in here? Who are you? What are you doing in my daughter's room?
Mrs. Kramer, we're terribly sorry about your loss. We're with the FBI.
FBI? Today? You come here today?
Mrs. Kramer, please listen to me. Another girl's life is at stake.
What do you mean? What other girl?
Her name is Claire Williams.
Claire? What's happened to Claire?
You know her?
A therapist told her to write through the pain and the alienation that she felt. It was all she had until the treatments.
The treatments?
For her Bellinis. Emily and Claire both had the disease. That's how they met. Here. They became such good friends.
Why'd you lie to me, Mr. Williams?
We met Emily at the hospital, waiting for blood tests. She and Claire started talking, sharing horror stories about the disease. They became friends. And one night over dinner, the conversation turned to how the medical establishment had abandoned us. See, there's only 3,000 people in this country who suffer from Bellini's. Not enough for the drug companies to make a profit. So they're not looking into developing a cure. We started talking to some other people we met who also had the disease. A microbiologist, an investment banker, the mother of a professional athlete. Started thinking about what we could do if we pooled our resources.
So Claire and Emily were treating themselves.
We didn't have a choice. We were desperate. We tried radical therapies normal doctors wouldn't touch. 3 months ago, we found the cure.
Time-release radioactive capsules.
I don't understand. Why lie?
Because the people we love are depending on it. I couldn't take the chance you'd stop that. Claire wouldn't want that. It's what gave us our lives back.
Mr. Williams, we will need the names of the other patients involved.
I can give you some, but I don't know all of them. You'll have to ask Dr. Nadine Patel.
Emily's doctor. He knew this was going on.
He cared enough to help us.
The medication. Do you have a sample?
Now, Olivia has already talked to the doctor at one point, and he claimed not to really know anything. And this might be a good time to tell you what the glyphs spell out that we see during the commercial breaks. And they spell out cells. There's not a lot. There's not any real known music in this episode. I found a site that's pretty good about, putting links to music that has played during the episode. And it doesn't look as though there is much in here. There are a couple of other things, a couple of little hints and Easter eggs along the way, and I'll discuss as I go. I've been doing a pretty good job of being able to capture screen caps of the observers in any given scene. This particular episode, I did notice the observer when I watched it, and then when I went back, I couldn't remember where the heck it was at, so I was like trying to comb through it, and I ended up having to cheat and go to the Fringipedia site, and if you haven't been there, they have all kind of information, but I had to go there and figure out exactly where he was. I remember it was at a gathering. I just couldn't find him, and then I finally did find him, so I'll have a screen capture of the observer when I post this episode as well. I've been trying to stay up on that, and I've been trying to do timestamps of when it is, but in this case, I kind of failed at that because I was in a hurry and I took the screen cap and thought, there's not a timestamp. But when I get to the audio clip, I will let you know that's where it's at. Anyway, we have this next clip, which makes the whole thing a little extra interesting. Olivia goes to discuss this, what's going on with the doctor. You know, she goes there, you know, and she has a file folder of photos and stuff she kind of throws down. Then they have this exchange.
What is this?
When I told you there were unusual circumstances surrounding Emily's death, these were the circumstances.
I don't understand.
We know how it worked, Dr. Patel. Ken Williams told us everything. What we don't know is who else was involved.
I'm not responsible for this. Not this. All I do is give them updates.
Who's they? Who's they?
Entropis.
The drug company?
You should just walk away. You have no idea who you're dealing with, what they're
capable
of.
I need a name, Dr. Patel. Dr. Patel? Dr. Patel?
Drop it! I swear, it was only supposed to be updates.
Dr. Patel,
I'm a doctor.
Put the gun on the ground now.
Do you want a name? David Estabrook.
No!
And of course, with that, he ends up committing suicide. Now, David Estabrook is the head of a pharmaceutical company, as he said, a great big pharmaceutical company. And so there is some sort of fundraising event, and Olivia attends and doesn't give him all the information about herself. He doesn't know she's an agent. She's pretending to be somebody else, but you know, all the information ends up coming out. I'm just going to play that clip now. during this clip, that is when you will see the observer. He's on the left-hand side of the screen when they do a faraway shot of the ballroom. What's a ballroom? Looks like a bar, really. But you will see him on the left. It's not a close-up shot, but he's just standing there observing it. And, you know, the thing that I find kind of funny about this is that they really are really good at observing because, you know, until the episode of the arrival, we realize that they're everywhere. I didn't even start noticing them, you know. And then once I went back to the rewatch, you know, obviously, you know, after that episode, every time I watched an episode, I'd try to pick them out and I would talk to my friends and say, hey, did you find them? And then, of course, during the rewatch, I picked them all out. And then I found a site that had, if I couldn't find them and they were in there, they were pretty good about mentioning where they were or even having some screenshots sometimes. But anyhow, let me play the clip and you'll understand why Olivia kind of loathes this man, because he just does think he's above the law and above, you know, that there's nothing anybody can do, you know.
I'm sorry. This must sound insanely naive to you.
No, hardly.
Science and technology have reached a point where our means of finally catching up with our imagination. And the only thing preventing us from doing truly visionary work are these moral-based restrictions that lawmakers put up in the name of public policy. That and money. We always need more money.
I'm going to let you in on a little secret, Amanda. It isn't about the money. It is about the resolve.
I haven't been entirely honest with you. I don't work for Baxo, but I do know a colleague of yours. Dr. Nadim Patel.
How is Nadim these days?
These days? Dead.
Sorry to hear that.
Not as sorry as I was to watch it happen.
Identity theft is a federal crime, Amanda.
So is kidnapping and murder, and it's Agent Dunham.
Tell me, what did you hope to get out of this conversation?
I already got it.
How old are you? 28? 29? You're an attractive young woman. I'm sure you want to start a family one day. It would be a shame if anything got in your way.
One thing before I set up the next clip here that I think is important is, you know, he's a bad guy, and that's what bad guys say, right? He's a bad guy with a lot of money. He's in charge of a big company. You know, he's got power and influence, and so that's what bad guys do. They, you know, they make threats like that, you know, basically saying, you know, you mess with me and I'll mess up your life, you know. Not that necessarily he's going to hurt her, but, you know, he can make sure her career takes a hit, right? But after you get done watching the episode, and I'm hoping that everybody listening to this breakdown has already, you know, freshly watched this episode within the last couple weeks. Do you realize on what level that was the wrong thing to say to her? Because she is already annoyed about, you know, thinking about her father and things like that. And so, you know, making that threat just actually fueled the fire. Now, the next clip I have is Broyles gets a phone call, and then Dunham comes into the federal building, and then they have this exchange. And I'm going to talk a bit about this exchange after I play the clip, because I really enjoyed this.
Dunham.
Hey.
I understand you paid a little visit to David Estabrook.
News travels fast. I was just about to touch.
In public, in a hotel bar.
I didn't realize my interview techniques were under such close scrutiny.
Everything we do is under close scrutiny. This task force that you're now part of, at best, it's controversial. We need to be perfect. Trying to intimidate such a high-profile suspect in a murder investigation is reckless at best.
Claire Williams is a prisoner right now, having God knows what injected into her body, and David Estabrook knows where she is. He's guilty, and he just assumes he'll get away with it. So excuse me, but right now, I couldn't give a damn about politics.
Which is exactly your problem, and now mine. You think you're the only one who wants to find Claire Williams? You violated the cardinal law of our profession. You let your feelings drive your decision-making. And as a result, you've endangered not only Claire Williams' life, but everything we're trying to do here. If I can't trust you to control your own passion, Dunham, then I can't trust you. Is that clear?
You'll have my report on the Esterbrook interview within the hour.
I'll be waiting.
Now, I have to say that this episode is... I'm trying to remember, and I could be misremembering. And if I do, somebody please send me an email or an audio comment or something just talking about what other episode that there is without giving too much away, because it's got to be a future episode. But this is one of the few episodes, or the only episode that I can remember, where you see Olivia start to fray around the edges. I mean, this whole case is taking its toll from so many different angles. You know, it's her birthday. She's waiting for this card from her dad, and we're going to get an explanation of that. I know I probably should explain that in the beginning, but I kind of like her delivery of it. All right. And if you haven't seen this episode in a long time, you really need to sit down and watch the conversation she has where she imparts the information about her past. Anyway, the end of that clip, which I cut off because I'm stupid, is, you know, Olivia walks away and she just decides to have a smart comeback. And she says, is there anything else that I should, you know, report to you before I do? And Royals is like, you should report everything to me. You know, you need to tell me everything. And the thing is Dunham knows that he's on her side, but, you know, throughout the five preceding episodes, there have been hints and things that have happened that have come our way that lets us realize that, you know, although Broyles is trying to do the right thing and he's a good investigator and things like that, and he'll back his people, it's constantly he has to be an ambassador, right? He's got to make sure that the fringe division doesn't get shut down and that they're able to continue the work because he believes in the work. And that means that when she goes, or any of his agents go and tick off the wrong people, that, you know, when they're handling these people, they have to do it in the right way. And they have to make sure that there's not any, you know, or a lot of blowback, or at least blowback that Broyles can be prepared for. But he has to be able to handle it because, let's face it, if you're a powerful person and you know somebody in government, you can make a lot of trouble. And the idea here is to keep the fringe division going. And as we go on and we find out that, you know, about the pattern and things like that, it's very important that, you know, all this craziness that's going on in the background that the fringe division is investigating gets investigated, gets stopped. They find answers. They can stop people from being hurt. And that's the bottom line here. But in this case, in particular, Olivia is so, so focused, has such tunnel vision on this case. And I know that we saw that in the case when she was worried about investigating cases that her and her partner had done in the past and whether or not they were done right or there was any kind of corruption. But the tunnel vision she's showing here is, this is to the extreme. You know, she's really kind of focusing on this, and she knows this guy is guilty, which doesn't seem like Olivia. It doesn't seem like the character in six episodes or five episodes up until now that we've come to know, where she cares about the people and she's trying to play by the rules. I mean, she's like, I know this guy's guilty. And, you know, it seems to me that, you know, for you and I, that's okay. But for somebody in law enforcement, you can't know that they're guilty because you are innocent until proven guilty. And I found that line kind of bothered me a little bit. Coming from her, like not bother me because the writing was bad, but bother me because it's like, you know, I've kind of connected with the characters and I'm like, this is out of character for her to say something like this, right? And that's how you really know something's up. Now, the next clip I have is a little bit of a longer clip, and it's an exchange between her and Peter. And Olivia, man, she is just hostile. And again, this is another, this is a major clue to something's up and something's bothering her. And I like the fact that Peter is just kind of no nonsense. You know, he's like, you know, he's kind of stuck doing this. He's trying to do his job and help with Walter and everything and help with the Friends Division. And he's slowly being enveloped in and less of a babysitter, more of a team member who has to, you know, that has to other duties beyond taking care of Walter, that, you know, these duties he's taken on himself. But, you know, it just, you know, basically he's like, you know what, you know, I haven't done anything wrong here. I don't know why you're all up my business. But anyway, here's the clip.
Hey, how's it going?
It's great. Esterbrook's our only lead to where they're holding Claire Williams, and I can't get to him. I mean, the guy's cleaner than snow. Not even as much as an unpaid parking ticket.
Well, I think we actually might be making some progress. A couple minutes ago, Walter thought he might have isolated the compound that's in Emily Kramer's blood, but then he got distracted by the unicorn running through the lab.
Funny. Anything else? Got any more jokes?
All right, something's been bugging you all day. Something other than Claire Williams. And that's okay. You know what? We're all allowed to have our bad days. What's not fine is blaming it on me. I want to find it just as much as you do.
You're right. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I had a stepfather. And when he drank, he'd accuse my mom of seeing other men and then he'd hit her. And she just lived with it. She never called the police. Not once. And then one day he beat her really bad and broke her nose. I was 9. He stormed out of the house, got in his car, drove off. My mom's crying. I can't help her. And then I hear his car. He's turned back around. He kept a gun in the drawer, near his bed. When he opened the door, I pulled the trigger. Then I pulled it again. And I can still see his face, almost daring me to finish. But I couldn't. So they took him to the hospital and said that he couldn't be saved, but he didn't die. He recovered. And then one night he just slipped away. We never saw him again. And I still blame myself because I should have done it. I should have killed him. And I know that rationally he is not responsible for all the bad things in the world, but he is responsible for some of them. And every year he sends me a card on my birthday just to let me know that he's still out there.
It's your birthday today. No man is untouchable, Olivia. If you really want Esterbrook, all you have to do is talk to your friend Nina Sharp. Massive Dynamic has 3 separate pharmaceutical divisions. They're all in direct competition with Intrepis. Their annual budget for corporate espionage could feed a mid-sized nation. I guarantee you, she has something on David Esterbrook.
Yeah, but even if you're right, I can't go to her.
Why not?
Because despite their annual budget, corporate espionage is wildly illegal. You really think that she'd admit that to me? It's here somewhere, I know it is. I just have to look harder.
So tell me that wouldn't mess with your mind. You know, that this guy is sending her a card to remind her that he's still out there. And you understand the drive now, that here's a bad guy that got away from things and, you know, got away from the havoc that he caused. He doesn't have to take any responsibility for the things he's done. And it's just in one person's life. And then you have somebody like Esterbrook, who obviously has harmed more than one person and is somehow involved. And you understand the drive behind this whole thing. Now, when I went into this episode, I remember this episode being one of the more, in the beginning, I thought it was more like the X-Files with we don't start with the main characters, you know, you start with the case, you know, which we don't have, we have some episodes like that in Fringe, but like, it seems like in the X-Files, there was a lot of them. And, you know, it kind of reminded me of that. And it kind of draws you in because in the first like four or five minutes in Holly's Diner, you have, you know, you start out with, you know, a woman that's hungry, and then end up with blood everywhere. And it's crazy. And, you know, I remembered that part of it when I started rewatching it, and I completely forgot all about the stepfather, and I've been calling him her father, and I'm sorry, it's her stepfather. But I had completely forgotten about that. And as I watched the episode, I realized just how good this episode was and how this was an opportunity for, you know, this was an opportunity. You know, we see a lot of Walter, and I think Walter steals the show. But this is really an opportunity for Anna Torv to really shine as an actress and bring this, you know, bring the character of Olivia Dunham to life and understand. I mean, the thing I like about this episode the most is that you're trying to figure out what's going on with her, what's happening, what's, you know, why, you know, she has this crazy drive suddenly. I mean, nothing happened in the last episode to make her extra special, you know, focused on this guy. You know, he hasn't really, we haven't seen this character before. It's like, what's going on? And then when we get this reveal halfway through the episode, it's like suddenly everything coalesces and you're like, I understand completely where she's coming from. I understand completely why she is so obsessed with capturing this guy and stopping him from doing what he's doing. Now, of course, you know, we all already know as soon as you're watching this scene, before Peter gets up to leave, you already know what's going to happen. Peter's going to go and try to get the information from Nina Sharp. And that's the next clip that I have.
Hi, I'm Peter.
Peter Bishop, Walter Bishop's son. You're not the only one who's done your homework. What can I do for you, Mr. Bishop?
Well, I was hoping I could take a moment of your time.
Does Miss Dunham know you're here?
No, she doesn't know I'm here.
Well, Peter, suppose we take a walk. You're suggesting that Intrepis is conducting illegal drug trials with human beings. That is a rather bold claim to make, Mr. Bishop. How are you able to substantiate your information?
Would you put it past them? Let's assume for a second that what I'm saying is true.
Hmm?
Where would they do it? They wouldn't risk using one of their own testing facilities. It'd have to be someplace off the grid.
You know, you still look just the same as you did when you were a child. Oh, I doubt you'll remember, but you and I spent a good deal of time together. Some of it right here. Your father and I were quite close when we were both much younger. Now, I have all kinds of information, Peter, and some of it does me no good. Well, take the Aymara people, for instance, of central Peru. I know that the soil beneath their land houses a naturally occurring metal alloy that is potentially hyperconductive. I also know that you have managed to successfully conduct business with these and other tribal concerns in parts of the world traditionally resistant to development.
I'm sorry, Ms. Sharp, I think I must have missed your question.
My question is, are you willing to make a bargain? I give you the exact location you want, and in exchange, I get to come to you someday, and you return the favor. No questions asked. Do we have a deal?
And of course, I'm going to say once again how much I love the character of Nina Sharp. Just a fantastic character, you know. And don't get me wrong, Blair Brown plays her very good. And I'm not trying to take anything away from that. You know, that's who Nina Sharp is at this point in time. But they could have had anybody as long as they had a character, the Nina Sharp character there, because she is, you know, you're just not sure. You're not sure where she's aligned. What is she trying to do? What's going on? You know, and I think if you'd had a guy play this role, I think we've seen that, you know, dozens of times, you know, where you have a guy that was more interested in himself. He's willing to help people here and there, as long as somewhere down the road, you know, he's planning ahead, there's going to be a reward for himself. And that is the character of Nina Sharp. And we don't see that done very often with a female character. And, you know, also like the fact that the thing about this character that I really like is it's because of this technology that, you know, she's able to still be alive, let alone have a cybernetic arm. And, you know, that's got to kind of lend a little bit to her allegiance and, you know, what the things that she's thinking. Now, this meeting is going to pay off a little bit. You know, what happens here over the next few clips is going to pay off at the end of the episode. And I can't wait to get there because it was a kind of a really cool reveal. But in the meantime, I have a couple clips I'm going to kind of put together here. And the first clip is a Walter figuring out exactly how to create a cure for what is happening to these young ladies. And then the next clip is, I believe it's a Peter and Olivia clip. I'm going to try to put them together here because it kind of goes all together and just kind of, we're going to try to roll with the momentum here.
You smell that?
Yes. And next time, how about a little warning?
Huh? Oh, not that. Methyl eugenol, the chemical responsible for giving hyacinths their aroma.
What about it?
I have been trying to determine what caused the radioactive capsules in Emily Kramer's bloodstream to burst at once. This is it, Asterisk.
Astrid. Her name is Astrid.
I've got it, Peter. Methyl eugenol is the key. That's what they injected her with. That's why these women were chosen. By itself, harmless. But given their treatments...
causing all the capsules to burst at once. They made her radioactive. They turned her into a weapon.
It will be a decidedly blue compound. And now that I... yes, yes! That's it. A bonding agent. That will work. That will interfere with the process.
How long? How long will it take to make the cure?
Oh, not long at all, now that I know.
Where's Olivia?
When did this happen? When did this become the world we live in? Patel, Esterbrook, these are the people we trust to take care of us.
5620 Stapleton Avenue. The facility where Claire Williams is being held.
How could you possibly...
radioactive isotopes have a heat signature that's visible to spy satellites. I had a friend track it down through the National Reconnaissance Office.
You have a friend at the NRO?
I have a friend who's cracked their control systems.
Peter, if I pull the trigger on this and the information's bad...
it's good. It's good.
Charlie? I've got a solid lead.
So I find it kind of interesting that Peter does not want to explain to Olivia that, you know, how he got the information. Now, the next clip I have is a shorter clip, and I debate about whether or not to include this, so I think I need to explain why. You know, the point of doing these breakdowns, I mean, obviously, you know, if you're like me, after you watch an episode, then you're it's kind of nice later on to listen to a recap or something like that to kind of, you know... maybe you'll pick up some information you didn't know. And it's entertainment, right? And that's the kind of the reason I do this. You know, I want you to be entertained. Hopefully you are. But the main point is I want you to watch the show, okay? And I want you to go back and watch the show and maybe see some of the things that I'm seeing. And hopefully, you know, through feedback, maybe you can point out some things that, you know, I didn't notice that I can go back and watch and kind of and do the, you know, for the more enjoyment of the show, because I really like Fringe. I think it's, like I said, I just think it's a spot on show. I mean, just does such a good job, and I'm really digging it. Of course, you know, I'm digging it much more now that I know that there's been a finale and we'll get the entire story. But this scene is they, you know, they swarm in and, you know, they find the lab and, the girl's ready to go critical, right? She's ready to, you know, all the capsules are going to go off. She's going to radiate everything. And Olivia is, you know, I trimmed off some of it, but this is just a great scene. And this goes back to what I was saying about Olivia just wanting to help the victims. And not only does she want to help the victims, but in this case, and maybe I'm reading too much into it, but this case, it looks as though to me, like, I think in her mind, she's thinking, you know what, if you can do this, if I can save this girl, then... I'm sticking it to the guy that thinks he's above everything, you know, that he's an untouchable individual and he can do whatever he wants. I'm winning. You know, this is a way for us to win and, you know, win one for the team or whatever. And so she's trying to get her to inject a syringe. Now, I trimmed some of this down, but in the very beginning, she's like, I need you to inject. She goes, I can't come in there. And she keeps saying it over and over because, and then like there's a glass window and she's got her face pressed up against there and she's like screaming in the window and she's smacking her hands against the window. I'm trying to get this lady who is in so much pain she can hardly move to get the syringe and inject it before she goes critical. And obviously we have flashes between the victim and the monitor showing that the monitor showing she's going critical. But I think it's kind of important to put this this scene in there because I don't know. There's a couple different payoffs at the end of this episode. The last few clips I have, I think we have three different payoffs, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But this is a big one. I think this is the biggest one because this is what it boils. It's not about capturing the bad man for Olivia. I don't think. I think it's about, you know, him not being victorious. Okay, and if she can save this girl, she can do her job, and he's not victorious, and it doesn't have to become personal. It just has to become, you know, you did this, but I undid it. And I'm always going to be here to undo the things that you do because that's my job and that's what I believe in. So basically, you bring it on. You bring in all the politics, all your buddies, all the big wigs. You bring on whoever you think can control us. But the thing is my small team has been able to undo what it took you all this time to do. And, you know, I'm always going to be here. I'm always going to be watching you, and I'm always going to be able to, I'm going to try my best to undo what you did. So basically, it's kind of a slap in the face to the guy. Anyway, that was a whole lot of buildup for a clip that's just going to have a lot of screaming and grunting in it. But I want you to go back and watch this scene and watch Olivia's face as she gives her the antidote.
Good. Claire.
And of course, with that, you know, it brings all the levels back down, and she is, you know, it's basically the cure. I'm not quite sure whether or not that's the cure forever, or she has to keep these treatments up or whatever. But at this point in time, she didn't explode, which is, you know, a big plus because, you know, exploding is bad. But I love the end of that when she's like, stab it in, and her accent comes back a little bit. Anna Torv is, I'm never sure if I'm supposed to say Torv. It always seems like when I say it, it comes out Torv, which is not her name. But when I say it, it always comes out that way. Anyway, Anna Torv, I believe she's Australian. And, you know, she does a really good job of, you know, covering up that accent. And it seems that there's not very many times when I can detect it. But I think at the end, that scene there when she's just stabbed in, I think you can kind of hear it a little bit. But, you know, I chalk it up to all the excitement. But what a great scene. I just love the scene because she's just so desperate. And you're looking right at the person. You know, and it's such a simple thing that needs to be done, but you can't go in the room with them. And, man, that's got to be all kind of frustrating. And I thought that she played that perfectly because that's exactly how I felt when I was watching it. The next clip is of Agent Dunham meeting with David Esterbrook, and she's come to arrest him. And he's just a smug SOB. And I love this scene, and you can just see the satisfaction in Dunham's face. And what I like about this is how she plays it, because she's done her job and she realizes that it all comes down to the money with these guys. And as the clip plays, you realize that's kind of how she's dealing with this, because, you know, he does have to answer to a board of directors. Anyway, I'm just going to play the clip.
Agent Dunham, apparently I didn't make my point clearly enough.
I thought you'd be interested to know that Claire Williams is safe.
Can't say I'm familiar with that name.
That's odd. Because an employee of yours, Elizabeth Sarnoff, just admitted that you supplied her with the facility and the equipment to make Emily Kramer and Ms. Williams into human weapons.
A disgruntled former employee will say just about anything to vilify the boss that fired her.
Then you won't mind coming with me to answer some questions.
Do you honestly see this going anywhere, Agent Dunham? I have a law firm on retainer that charges more by the hour than you make in an entire year.
Then I suggest you get them to meet you at the FBI.
I guess I will include police harassment in the litany of charges that I will file against you.
I'm still gonna walk you out that door in handcuffs for resisting questioning. So the press that I tipped off can splash your picture all over the news. Now, you may not answer to me or the federal government, but you do answer to a board of directors. And I wonder what their response will be when they have their company dragged into the middle of a murder investigation.
Now, I found the entire scene right there very satisfying as a viewer. Okay, because you can just see and feel the satisfaction coming from Olivia Dunham of being able to do something with this jackass, right? But at the same point in time, the way she's delivering these lines and the way that she's the smugness that she has, because she knows she's kind of has him over a barrel, man, I just want to smack her, you know, because she's just so smug about the whole thing. But I loved it. It's just a great scene and one of the few times, I think, in Fringe where you get that sort of satisfaction, because usually you have somebody die or they disappear or, you know, it's not really the person in charge that's getting busted. It's you know, one of their henchmen. And you don't get the satisfaction you have, and not necessarily that he's going to get arrested, but there's no way that his career is not going to take some sort of hit from the fallout from this mess, right? Okay, so that was you know, one of my favorite scenes in this episode. Anyway, the next scene is of Olivia having to go to Broyles, and you know, kind of you know, it's just an interesting scene. But she just kind of, she comes in, and when she first walks in, you know, she, well, I think this might be the scene where she first goes through the mail to see if the card's there, and then she looks a little sheepish to me, like she knows she's going to get in trouble or get scolded for the way that she handled this because she made it such a public spectacle. But at the same point in time, you can't tell me that Broyles doesn't see, you know, where she's coming from. But anyway, I like the relationship in this show, and I'll continue to enjoy the relationship between the two because they both have exactly the same goal. But because of the different levels, you know, she's a field investigator she's just trying to find answers, and he has to field all the crap. And of the two, I honestly think that Broyles has the harder job. I think that, I don't know how, you know, you can be somebody like him and see all the things that are wrong and just can't say, can't you see this stuff is wrong? But you have to, you know, it's all politics, and I think it can be very mind numbing and very frustrating. But anyway, let me just play the clip.
I guess by now you've heard
that you frog marched a senior officer of a multi-billion-dollar conglomerate out of his office. Yeah, I heard. Quite a few cameras there.
The press, they always get their pound of flesh. I understand that you think I acted too emotionally. And putting aside the fact that men always say that about women they work with, I'll get straight to the point. I am emotional. I do bring it into my work. It's what motivates me. It helps me get into the headspace of our victims, see what they've seen. Even if I don't want to, even if it horrifies me. And I think it makes me a better agent. If you have a problem with that, sorry. You can't fire me. But I hope you don't.
You're not getting off that easy, Agent Dunham. I'll see you in the morning.
Okay, that clip was about a minute 20. I want you to rewind, listen to the music, and then join me back here. All right, go. Okay. I didn't realize, and I mean, I love that scene. Okay, but I didn't realize. I say that a lot, don't I? There's a lot of scenes in these episodes that I love. But I did not realize how much I hated the music in that scene. It does not fit the scene at all. I mean, when I'm watching the scene, maybe it does, but listening to the scene, it does not fit. What's with all this dun dun? I mean, why are we playing this creepy, scary music? It's not creepy and scary. I think that scene should have been played without music, and that's just my two cents. I'm not knocking the music. I'm not knocking the scene. I'm just saying the two didn't mesh together real well. I didn't realize until just now when I listened to it. I'm just not sure why we got this bassy piano music. I mean, what's going on with that? I don't know. But anyway, I personally think that scene would have played much better without the music. And, you know, again, I have to point this out again. You know, I watch a lot of TV, probably too much TV, and I do a lot of, I've done quite a few breakdowns of episodes. And, you know, I love doing the clip shows. It's, you know, I love talking about the things that I enjoy. And the people who are doing the audio for Fringe need to win every award that there is, you know, just like John Noble needs to win every award that he can win, because the audio for Fringe, all the dialogue and everything, it all sounds so good, so crisp, so clear. They do such a good job with this in making it all fit in. And man, I just can't, I'm not sure how they do it, you know, but it just, they do a fantastic job. Anyway, I know my clip shows last longer than the episode, but hey, I'm more fun, I think. Anyway, the next clip I have is kind of a payoff, and let me play the clip, and then I have a couple of ideas I'm going to toss at you.
The financial markets, but for pure shock value, nothing beats today's very public detainment of Intrepid's David Estabrook by the FBI. Intrepid's stock is being absolutely pummeled in overnight trading, and analysts predict it'll open at $23 a share. That's a 10-year low, which of course is very good news for Intrepid's competitors. Most notably, Massive Dynamics. Shares of MD are up almost 12% as investors flee to the most reliable brand in the sector.
Now, what I was wondering when I actually the very first time I saw this episode, I wondered this, and there's nothing. I don't think that there's anything to really support this theory through the rest of season one. I cannot remember, and it's just such a minor thing. But you know, maybe as I go on, I'll find some more information. But I have to wonder, because of the financial gain that Massive Dynamic and, you know, Nina Sharp will get from this, I've got to wonder, you know, during this episode, they keep talking about the customer. The idea was to deliver this girl to a customer, you know, get her ready and deliver. And I'm thinking there's a very real possibility that somebody affiliated with Massive Dynamic could be the customer. And the whole game plan here, the whole idea was to damage this other firm so that Massive Dynamic will continue to, you know, gain market share. And I'm just throwing it out there. I don't know that's how it is. And I cannot remember, you know, through season one, I don't remember anything being mentioned. But, you know, what if that was the idea? But I'm going to kind of go with that. I'm going to kind of go with, you know, because when we're seeing this scene, it's split between two scenes. It's first we see Nina Sharp riding in her car, listening to the radio, and then it cuts over to Agent Dunham sitting in her car, and they're listening to the same radio broadcast. And Nina Sharp just gets a big smile on her face. So I have to wonder, you know, do you think that maybe she had something to do with all this? Anyway, with that being said, I have one final clip. Yes, I'm getting to the end. And this is a clip of Peter and Walter outside their hotel, and Agent Dunham meets them there. And I'm going to go ahead and play the clip.
Hey!
Olivia, did you lock yourself out again?
Actually, Walter, this is our hotel.
Oh. I need to talk to you.
Sure. I'll see you upstairs, okay?
It's nice to see you.
Good night, Walter.
And remember tonight, please, the red toothbrush is mine.
White for Walter. That's me. Right?
Yes.
Everything okay?
I know where you got your information. About Claire Williams. What was her price? What did Nina Sharp want in return?
Nothing untoward, if that's what you're worried about.
Peter.
You don't have to worry about me. I'm a big boy. I can take care of myself. You've been looking out for me, so I'm just returning the favor.
Thank you.
No letter today, was there?
No.
Happy birthday.
You better get back upstairs before Walter falls asleep in your bed.
Yeah. He has actually done that. While I was sleeping. Really not something you want to wake up to.
Good night.
Good night.
And this has been a very heavy Olivia Dunham centric episode. You know, usually you get a whole lot of But you get usually get a pretty good mix, and you get a lot of Walter Bishop because he's trying to solve the case, and we didn't have a lot of that, and it works. I mean, I like when the episodes kind of even out. You know, you have enough of them that you don't think that, oh, you know, he took the day off or whatever. And I don't know about you, sometimes when I watch episodes and there's a character that's not in it, you never see them, and they're one of the main characters, you think, man, they must have had that day off, or they didn't have the budget to pay that person or something like that. And it takes me out of it because I just end up thinking about that, you know. I like when we have a nice mix. But the way the episode ends, of course, is Olivia goes home and, you know, there ends up being a card under the door. I don't remember if it came through a mail slot in the door, if it was just under the door. And, of course, she opens it up and it's not signed or anything. And she opens the card. It says, thinking of you. And that's all it says. And that's kind of how the episode ends, because she has this victory. And, of course, we bring it all back around to she still has this defeat hanging over her head. But anyway, that is the episode. I don't think that there's not really any other clues here that I can give you. I told you about the Observer. I told you what the glyphs were. And that seems to be about it. But anyway, this is, you know, an episode that I'm very surprised at, because the overall, like the story in the episode about the cure and all that, I don't really care about. I mean, that's not, and that's kind of how you have to get, you have to kind of wrap your mind around that in season one of Fringe. That, and this was the problem. This is why it had lukewarm reviews, because, you know, you really can't, I guess you can watch them as one-off episodes, but the thing is that if you're not watching them in order, you're missing out on quite a lot. And the stories in the episodes are okay, but it doesn't really seem like it goes anywhere. Like the fact that all this stuff happened in this episode doesn't really mean anything for any other episode. Okay. I mean, there's not like, I mean, of course, you know, you can say that's the pattern or, you know, whatever. There's this fringe science going on. And that's what they're there for. But in this episode, I mean, let's face it, at the end of the episode, the only thing you're thinking about is Agent Dunham. You know, you don't think back and say, you know, I wonder what happened to that girl, or I wonder what happened to that guy, or I wonder how, if anybody else has a disease, or, you know, how this is going to impact the fringe universe. No, you just say, hey, you know, I understand some of the drive behind Dunham now. They do a good job of evening out the story and the characters driving the show, rather than just being a character-driven story like Lost was, having a more story-driven show like The X-Files was. They do a nice, even-handed job of doing both. And we're going to have episodes that are just mostly story, but you got to remember, we're only into episode 6, and we don't know enough about the characters to really, it's, you know, the way that they're doing the development. And, you know, I think by the time we get to episode 8, I think that I'm trying to look here. By episode 8, I think we have a pretty good handle on all the characters, you know, and where they're coming from. And then by episode 19, which is the next to the last episode, we have a big reveal there. And that kind of is a defining moment for a lot of things to come in the show. And again, these are they're all story-driven episodes, but because of the characters that we know and that we've met, it all makes, you know, it all really coalesces and comes together. And that's one of the things that I like. I mean, that's why there's a lot of episodes that, you know, they're not clunkers in season one, but, you know, once you get to the end of season one, you're like, okay, wow, that's pretty impressive. Then you hit season two and you get kind of caught up in it all again, and you realize that season one, everything that happened there was necessary, but it's kind of slow considering, you know. I think they do a really good job. When you go back and see what they've done overall for this whole series, you realize that everything kind of falls into place. Anyway, the episode was The Cure, episode 6 of season 1. Well, folks, that is the show. As always, you can go to scifidig.com and find a million ways to follow me in the show notes. And we have a comment line. You can email me. You can go to the forums. You can go to the Google group. You can go to the Google Plus community. There's a Facebook group. There's a bazillion ways to contact me and to engage with the other diggers. The Google Plus group seems to be the way that's really working. You know, I got to say that between pulling the audio and doing the cast, I don't put a lot of effort into posting the episodes up there on either one of the groups or whatever. I just like to start conversations about science fiction or other people do, and then I jump in. But please feel free to do that. You know, if you want to, you know, follow me on Twitter or have a conversation, you know, don't ever think that there's not, I mean, you can always shoot me an email or shoot me a tweet or whatever. And, sometimes it might take me a couple days, but I will get back to you. Anyway, folks, that is the episode. Thank you for taking the time to download and listen. Feedback is always welcome about any number of things or book reviews or whatever you want to do for the show. It's your show. Please feel free to contribute. This is Aaron for the Sci-Fi Dig Podcast. Over and out.